The trading space has become such a mess in the past 3 years. There's a lot of nonsense and bull that goes on with brokers, with influencers. They focus more so on being an influencer than actually being good at the craft. It was very, very difficult to a point where honestly, I thought about quitting. I was like, this, if you are able to perform well at whatever job or whatever thing you're doing, you will have confidence.
What's up, Umar? You good? Thank you very much for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
It's good to have a trader. For the first time that I'm speaking to, because I don't really know anything about the trading world, and you seem to be the don of the trading world.
You know what it is? I hate being labeled as a trader nowadays. The moment, even when I meet people, I have to tell them I don't trade. I have a software business or something else, because the trading space has become such a mess in the past 3 years that everyone is a trader, everyone's a mentor. So sometimes I kind of have to crawl out of my skin like, oh shit, I'm a trader.
So how do you label yourself?
It depends who I meet. Like if I'm meeting a trader, sure, I'll let them know like, hey, I trade. But if I'm meeting someone brand new that has no idea who I am, I'll tell them, hey, I have a software business, right? That's it. I don't go into the trading side at all. Because the first thing they ask is, oh, do you have a mentorship? Do you sell this? Do you sell that? And it's like, no, I don't. But, you know, people jump to those conclusions.
So when did you get into this trading scene?
So I got into trading in 2013. I was 18. As soon as I turned 18, I have an early birthday in January. So I turned 18 and got into trading. So this is when trading wasn't popular. So back in 2013, like no one was trading. It wasn't like the main thing as it is today.
You'd already made the decision you weren't going to go to college.
I said I wasn't. I did go for 3 semesters because my mom like pushed me. She's like, please, I need you to go to college. Please, I need you to go to college. So I was like, you know what? Let me dive into trading. And if I can make money out of it, my mom was like, okay, if you can make money out of it, I will let you avoid college.
Yeah.
And obviously, I avoided college before I started making money, but I still ended up leaving after 3 semesters.
Yeah. So why trading though?
So when I was 18, I looked on Forbes.com on who the richest people in the world were, and the top 3 people had hedge funds. And I was like, what's a hedge fund? And when I looked into hedge funds, all of these people somewhat traded stocks in some degree, right? So I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to make money. I want to get into trading. So I had about 20 grand saved up. I took the 20 grand and just dumped it into the markets. You know, you're 18, you're full of yourself. You have this ego thing going on. And I'm like, I'll figure it out. I put the 20 grand into the market. The 20 grand goes to 30, 35 grand. And once it goes there in 2 months, I'm like, okay, I figured it out. As an 18-year-old, I just made 10, 15 grand. I got it. I'm rich. This is it. And then 4 or 5 months later, everything went down to about 2 grand. And then when it went there, I'm like, oh my gosh, shit, this is actually not.
Welcome to the world of trading.
Welcome to the world in general. Yeah. You know, you see it and you're like, oh shit, you get slapped in the face. And then from there, I kind of had this moment where I was kind of like, do I keep trading? Do I keep taking this career or something I want to do? And I took a step back and one thing I've always had about myself that one thing I like is I'm very honest with myself. So if something isn't working or is working, I will ask myself, did I actually try? Did I actually, you know, put in the effort required? And at the time, I was like, no, I didn't. I just took money, dumped it into an account, pressed buttons, hoped to make money, and it didn't work out. So if I leave right now, I have to accept that it wasn't trading that didn't work out. It was I didn't try to make trading work.
Yeah.
You know, it's different if I try for a year or 2 years and it doesn't work. So then from there, I was like, you know what? I'm going to double down. I'm going to give this 2 to 3 years. And the reason I said 2 to 3 years is everything that I've understood at that age point was things take time. I can't give any career, be it e-commerce or whatever it may be, 2 months, 3 months and quit. I have to give it some time, let's say 2 to 3 years. And if I give it my 100% and it doesn't work out, then sure. But for me, it was kind of like, why wouldn't it work out if I'm trying and I'm taking the right steps?
Is there an advantage to going off and doing it yourself to begin with, or actually maybe working at a trading company and learning the fundamentals there for maybe a year or two and then going off by yourself?
So if I could go back and if there was a trading company to let me work there, I would take it up for free, like even if they didn't pay me. But it's very hard to get those positions, right? So it would make sense to work at a firm or work under someone that can somehow guide you or whatever the case is. But as an 18-year-old, not a lot of companies are going to give you internships.
Yeah. Well, are they? Because I imagine a lot of people are wanting those positions. So they're only going to be hiring the best of the best.
Yeah, so what I've seen is they're looking for people that are coachable, people that have some foundation, something that they can build on. You know, most of the time, as you know, as an 18-year-old, it's hard to take an 18-year-old and guide them the right way. They don't want to listen. They think they know everything, so it's a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. But then also, some of them are looking for college degrees at the time when I looked. So it was kind of out of the equation of like, hey, let me go and try to work at a firm or whatever the case is. I did apply at some firms at the time. Never heard back.
Yeah. Who did you admire back then?
Trading wise,
I guess you were admiring the individuals as opposed to the big companies.
Yeah, there weren't any big companies that I remember. I think one person that comes to my mind, even though he doesn't trade, but he's in the world of investments, is Ray Dalio.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Him, he was one person. Like I looked at Warren Buffett and all these like investors, but they're not traders, mm-hmm. but they made money in the stock market, you know? So it was kind of like no trader at the time. Cause like I said, trading wasn't as big as it is now. Like if you go to a trader now, it's like, hey, who do you admire as a trader? They'll have names. Back then, the trading scene didn't have much traders that were kind of active.
Well, I imagine the resources as well to learn about the art of trading were very different as well. So how were you teaching yourself how to trade?
So people always ask me, like, who's your mentor, right? And I'm like, well, in trading, I had 1,000 mentors. You know, you go to books, you go to YouTube videos, you go to different things that are available online. But the problem with education in any industry is because there's a lot of resources, you don't know what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
So you just consume everything. So I kept consuming, applying, working. Some things worked, some things didn't work. Consumed, applied, worked, didn't work. And I kept doing that over and over again to a point of just, you know, after 10 years later, I'm kind of like, okay, well, now I see all the BS out there. I see what works and what doesn't work. But that is kind of like the con of it, because you do have resources, but just because something's a resource doesn't mean it's valuable.
Yeah. It's the same with the fitness world.
Yeah.
Like there's all these like bullshit ideas when it comes to what you should eat and not eat. And I tried a lot of them. And then I just figured out for myself, okay, this doesn't work, or this doesn't really fit into my lifestyle. These are the things that do work. And I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, yeah, I could actually go and do the absolute bare minimum and get the best returns from that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the moment on social media, someone has a following or a bunch of likes, and even in fitness, and they share something, it's like, okay, well, they have to be right because people are watching and listening and liking. And the same thing carries over to trading. You know, if you watch a YouTube video with a bunch of views or subscribers, you're like, okay, well, because this guy has views and subscribers, he knows what he's talking about. Yeah. And you as a beginner, you mimic that, and you spent a year or two of just going down this weird rabbit hole.
Have you got a thing?
Have I got a thing?
Like a thing that makes you stand out from other traders? Like, from observing your presence on social media, like you have a pretty substantial following and a lot of people are watching your videos. So why do they admire you?
Sure. So two reasons I would think that I stand out is, number one, I've always kept it real with trading. I've never ever said, and I don't believe trading is easy. I don't think anyone can get into trading and make money. And I've always showcased my profits logging into my broker. Right? Because I can come here and I can say, hey, Mike, I've made X amount. But it's different if I can go on my broker, log in, make a video and show you logging into the platform, not a screenshot, not anything like that. So it kind of justifies where it's like it's a regulated broker, TD Ameritrade. He's logged in. He showcases he's made the money. And then he also goes and says, trading is very difficult. I don't think everyone should do it. And if you do it, give yourself 2-3 years to actually master the craft. Where the actual noise on social media is, hey, get started in trading. I'll teach you how to trade and I'll teach you how to make $1 million in 30 days or X amount of money in 30 days. It's so easy. Everyone should get started. So I think when people hear that I'm being honest about how difficult it is, they kind of go, well, okay, I think I can relate to this guy because it is difficult. He is telling the truth about it instead of trying to sell something and push people into buying whatever the case may be.
Yeah. I think as well, if you are being transparent with your losses, people rate that.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people are afraid of showing that. They just want to tell everybody about the big wins.
Yeah.
And from that, sell or fleece whatever it is that they're trying to sell to people.
Yeah, yeah. Because people see like, hey, like in 2020, I've had my biggest loss, which was about $500,000 of my cash and $400K unrealized, which is about $900K of realized and unrealized. And when I took the position, I publicly announced it. And when I lost, I publicly showcased, hey, I was wrong. And it does still hurt when you lose money, but I think showing people the real raw truth of trading, which you're going to have losses, mm-hmm. you're going to take big wins, big losses, whatever the case is, people kind of admire that more because that's the truth of trading.
Are you very public with how much you've made since you started and how much you're currently worth, or do you keep that a secret?
Well, worth-wise, I keep that a secret, but trading-wise, I have shared it because I am giving people trading advice, if you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And I have been a big fan of, if you are listening to anyone, you want to make sure that they can back it up. Like if I'm listening to you about fitness, like I can listen to you, I can see it physically. But if you're like this fat guy and you tell me about fitness, I don't really want to take your advice. You know what I mean? So in trading, if I'm telling you something, I want to be able to say, hey, I have been through it and I have the results to speak. Mm-hmm. For it, you know, so I have showcased my live logins. Like if you go down my Instagram every year, I go in my account, I make a video showcasing my year-to-date profits, what I made, what I lost in conjunction to what the final number has been. So I've shared that every year for mm-hmm. at least the past 5 years.
And as a trader, how do you actually calculate how much you're worth? Because surely from day to day, it's like
yeah,
all over the place.
So you're trading intraday movements, right? So it's like you're buying something at $10 and you're selling it for $12, right? So you make $2 on the transaction. Now, if I buy 1,000 shares, I'm making $2,000. So it's like at the end of the day, if I buy something, I'm selling it at the end of the day or within minutes or seconds. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to have the profits or losses extracted immediately. So it's not like a long-term portfolio play where I'm buying Apple and holding it throughout the year and seeing what my net worth goes up and down. You're actually making transactions, buying and selling, and you're getting the net return of it, be it a loss or a profit.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm going to just put myself in the shoes of someone who is an absolute beginner, aka me. So when it comes to trading, right, there's how many different markets are there to trade in?
Sure.
And is Forex the same as normal trading, or is that completely separate?
So from a trading component, it's relatively, the concept is the same, right? Because you could be trading a stock, you could be trading futures, you could be trading options, you can be trading Forex. Like the concept is the same. You're buying something and selling it, mm-hmm. right? I'm personally not a fan of Forex. The reason I'm not a fan of Forex is because the Forex market is not centralized, right? So if you open up a broker and I open up a broker, we most likely will get different prices. Right. You also can't see the order flow of these trades. You also can't see the volume of these trades, the legitimate volume, the legitimate transactions. Now, what I trade, let's say, futures, or I trade the stock market. Every transaction that goes on there is by a centralized exchange. So if you and I make a transaction to, let's say you buy Apple, I sell Apple to you, you can see one transaction was done at this exact time. Mm-hmm. In Forex, you can't see that. So, you know, it's funny. I tweeted about this 2 days ago, saying I don't understand why someone as a beginner would want to trade Forex, because the hurdles in Forex are a lot more difficult.
It already sounds risky, more risky.
Yeah, because you know you're dealing with brokers, you know, creating massive slippage where if you're buying something at one price, they might sell it to you at a different price. Mm-hmm. Second, the market is not centralized. Because it's not centralized, it's more difficult to kind of get or find an edge, especially the way I trade, right? The way I trade is I look at the interaction between buyers and sellers to identify who is in control. So I look heavily at order flow to understand that. Now, for me to look at order flow, I have to somewhat be able to see who's buying and who's selling. And Forex, you know, to my understanding, you can't see that. You don't have a centralized marketplace to see all of the transactions. So it makes it really difficult to have that edge. So it's also one thing I've seen in the Forex industry, and I know there's a lot of great Forex traders, but because there's very minimal amount of money required in the Forex space, it invites a lot of scammy people. So in the Forex space, what I've seen, once again, you know, hats off to the people that are doing well, the very few people in that market, and I don't want to discredit them. But this year, when I looked at the Forex space, because we started a software company and I kind of had to look at that side, there's a lot of nonsense and bullshit that goes on with brokers, with influencers, because some of these influencers in the Forex space are getting paid 100, 200 grand a month just to promote a broker. And some of these brokers are bullshit.
I've seen that a lot with people who've got a couple hundred thousand followers. They would just put up this weird post.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it wouldn't even be them. it'd be a picture of the trader like standing up next to some car with his thumbs up, and then the caption would be some bullshit caption saying how, oh, this guy's such a good trader, like I really trust him, I've been working with him for so long, blah blah blah, you should get involved. And it's just like the most weirdest fake thing ever. But I remember there was a certain point in time where it just all of a sudden I started seeing it pop up everywhere. So obviously these Forex traders were paying influencers a pretty decent amount of money.
Yeah, the brokers
purely
were,
to get exposure to them, and I guess to get clients.
Yeah, and you, once again, I'm not saying the Forex market is bad. It's just that market has attracted a lot of bad people or bad characters because of the not so good ways to make money. Mm-hmm. Like a broker will pay you a lot of money to get clients on and deposit money because the brokers aren't regulated. Right. Now, if you go into the stock market or you go into trading, let's say futures, everything is regulated because there is a centralized exchange, CME. So everything has to go through that. Yeah. You can't make a broker take someone's money and not take the trades. It's illegal. Mm-hmm. But in Forex, that gets done.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So if I was a beginner to this and I had like a spare $5,000, $10,000, and I was like, right, I want to put this into the market, what would you say is the absolute fundamental basics they need to understand before they put their money anywhere?
So before you put money in, I think you first need to have the basic fundamentals of how the market works, right? You can't, and the market doesn't work the way you see on social media. You know, you see people drawing lines and all this stuff and these chart patterns. And when you think about it from a deep point of view, right, big institutions are the ones that move the market. Right. The market is also done by a lot of algos. Mm-hmm. Right. Now everything is high frequency trading. They're not looking at a pattern and saying this is the pattern that's formulated, so we need to buy more, or this is a pattern that's formulated, we need to sell more. Algos are operating based on the behavior of buyers and sellers. Well, are buyers more aggressive? Are buyers more seller? Are sellers more aggressive? Are there more passive buyers? Are there more passive sellers? Who is in control of price? They will respond off that, not patterns. So I think most jargon that you see on social media, number one, avoid that. Mm-hmm. Avoid, you know, following these patterns. Avoid following basic things that people follow. Like, hey, these are support levels. These are resistance level. I think go into the fundamental of understanding the relationship between buyers and sellers. I would understand the order book. What is the order book? How does the order book work, right? How does it showcase the relationship of buyers and sellers, and then translate that onto a chart, right? So you need to understand the context and then understand the relationship of buyers and sellers before you go on and take on a trade. Now, you can practice all of this on like a paper trading account. So you can go open up an account, take fake trades where they don't, like, it's just fake money, just to practice. So I would recommend someone to do that first for a couple of months and then start with a very minimal amount, even like $1,000 or $2,000, and just start practicing for 4 months, 5 months, and just get familiar with the concepts before dumping in a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think the biggest mistake people make is they open an account, they fund 10, 20, 30,000 looking to make a lot of money, and they blow it, which is what's going to happen.
And how many hours per day do you reckon somebody should spend on the practice period?
I
would imagine the more time you spend on it, the better you're going to get. But that's really down to how much spare time you have.
I think the spending time component, I always say this too, where for traders, you will become a better trader by spending more time off the charts than on the charts, right? What I mean by that is if you do take trades, go and journal them. Go and review your trades. Go and review what happened here, right? Go and backtest some of the strategies. Go back in time. So what backtesting is, for people that don't know, you can go back in time 3 years ago, 4 years ago on an instrument or whatever date it is, and you can play that action that happened. So I can go back to, let's say, 2017 of January 4th till today and play every day, minute by minute, and practice. Right, and test that strategy out. So if you start doing those things, it just gives you this massive advantage of just picking up the skill set, you know, getting muscle memory of knowing how price is moving, where price is moving, how it's responding at key levels, what is happening at those key levels, and what is the interaction. So that's where the practice element goes. But I would say, hour-wise, it's all different, because you can spend 3 hours and you can consume and learn more in 3 hours than maybe I can. Maybe it may take me 6 hours. So I think that's kind of contingent on each person.
You mentioned journaling.
Yeah.
You're a big advocate of that. And by journaling, do you just mean at the end of the day, you're just writing down a summary of what has happened that day.
So in one essence, yes, but the whole component of journaling is tracking your data, right? So the idea of tracking your data is if you have a business, right, the first thing you're going to do in every business is you're going to have something like QuickBooks. You're going to have something to see your P&L statement, where you're spending money, where you're making the most money, what your costs are, and so on. In trading, we should do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Traders don't do that. Traders open an account, fund it with X amount, and put on trades. Mm-hmm. And they have no idea what strategy is profitable under what market conditions. They're not aware of what their faults are. They're not aware of where their mental biases are, because trading is a big, big mental game. So it's like, hey, what is my pre-market game plan? So before the market opens, how am I looking at the market? How am I evaluating the market? What are things that I need to improve? What are patterns that I'm recognizing within myself? Like one pattern I recognized within myself early on is on Mondays, I would go in with big size, because over the weekend, I would get this weird excitement of, I can't wait to start the week. I can't wait to start Monday and make money. I would take a trade risking more than I should. And then the remaining 4 or 5 days, I would spend trying to make that money back. Mm-hmm. Another mistake that I still make till this day is I get very biased on some days. Oh, I think the market's going to go up because of X, Y, and Z. And if the market doesn't showcase me that, I don't change my bias. I get stuck on my bias. And the way I've learned that is by tracking my data, journaling my thought process, and just kind of looking into myself and how I think and how I operate. So I think people also have this bad notion of journaling. It's like, oh, at the end of the day, I got to write in my journal. No, mm-hmm. it's actually, you know, reflecting on your thought process and the trades that you have taken, and maybe the trades you've missed and why you missed them. And that just allows you to get better.
There's so much psychology behind it.
Yeah.
It's especially if you're the type of person who's just like really cocky and overly confident. Oh,
yeah.
And just
the market will humble you. Yeah. And I've seen that happen with people. I've seen it happen a lot with people in great professions, right? Like people that move over from, let's say, being a doctor or a surgeon. Like I've had a surgeon in the past that has transitioned into wanting to make trading their full-time job. Mm. And, you know, from a surgeon's point of view, it's like, hey, I'm a surgeon. I'm a god. I'm so smart. And, you know, you go into trading and it kind of humbles you where it's like, no, you're not. Mm. The market is always right. And then you start dealing with your own inner demons of maybe you get too cocky, or maybe you have too much ego, or maybe you get fearful, or maybe you don't know how to take a loss, or you don't know how to be wrong. And these things show up on the charts. Mm. They show up on your P&L.
I feel like there's a lot more to it. And is it really even a possibility to get half good at something like this if you're doing it part-time? Like, I feel like by the sounds of it, you have to really go all in, and you start reaping the rewards years after you've been in the game.
I would like to think that. So going to me, I have been trading for 10 years. I have made majority of my money in the past 3 to maybe 4 years.
Yeah.
That's where my big rewards started coming in. So it's like, and I've been doing it full time. You know, so when I see people that want to do it part time, I'm like, yes, you can transition into it part time later on. But mm-hmm. once you have the foundation, like now I can go part time. I can trade some days, trade some months, go on and off, because I've built the foundation, I've built the systems, and I've built the awareness of how to trade.
And you're doing this all by yourself. You haven't like built up a network of traders that know their shit, and you're all communicating with each other, and then like they're saying, oh, you know, you should put your money in this or take your money out of that. Is it all just done by yourself?
So up until now, yes. But here in Dubai, we recently opened up a trading floor where we're trying to recruit great traders to come and trade on the floor and deploy capital to them, deploy tools to them, and just split profits, right? Mm-hmm. Because I do think there's traders that if you take them under, let's say, you know, a certain company and you are able to train them, you're able to make so much more money with them, because a lot of traders have this mental blockage.
Is that the black line trading?
Yeah, that's black line trading.
Interesting. We'll get onto that later, because I imagine that's going to be something pretty big for you.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on giving your money to other people to trade on your behalf?
Giving people my money to trade, which is what we're going to do with Blackline, it's fine as long as you have the risk parameters in place, mm-hmm. right? So let's just say I was to give you 100 grand, right, to trade. You would have a risk parameter of like your max loss could be 5 grand, right?
Just like low, medium, high risk.
Yeah. So I have to, you can't just take someone on day one and give them massive risk. Yeah. You have to allow them to build up, and then that could take months to build up size and build up their risk parameter.
Because that's what I've been, my dad actually made me do this. He was like, don't spend all of your money. Like, you should be putting some of your money away. And he has a friend who works in trading. And I can't even remember when I started doing this. It must have been when I was 24, maybe. You know, we're talking like 10 years ago. I allocate a certain percentage of my income and it goes to this guy, and then he trades on my behalf. And I remember him asking me, he was like, well, how
is he trading or is he investing it?
I think investing.
Investing, okay, yeah. I'll assume so.
But that is, investing is safer.
Yeah, it's you're buying, for argument's sake, you could be buying Tesla stock and holding it for 10 years. Trading is you're once again, you're buying or trading the intraday movements. You're buying Apple at 112.10 and selling it at 113.
Oh, okay, yeah, so he's investing.
He's investing, yeah. So I think that's fine. I think parking your money with firms is okay. I haven't done that. Mm-hmm. I've just invested my money on my own. I am familiar with the markets. I'm familiar with the market cycle. So there's times I would stay very heavy in cash. And then there's times I would deploy cash a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm more comfortable because I'm in that field. I think if you're not in that field and you are working with someone that has a proven track record, I don't see why it would be a bad idea to give them money.
And the evidence of their wins or their proven track record, how do you find that?
They should be able to provide it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. If it's a company, they should have a track record for the past 10 years or whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. If they've been in business for 20 years, hey, I want to see your portfolio for 20 years. How has it been? Mm-hmm. So it's like when you go to like Warren Buffett, right? He has his own company that, you know, he is buying up stocks and buying up companies. So you could buy up his share, but let's say he was an investment advisor, you would give him money and he would basically park your money in different assets. And you'd be able to see, hey, in the past 10 years, this guy has made 40%. This guy has made 60% with 2 red years, maybe 4 red years. Has he or she managed, you know, losses? So you should be able to get that data from them.
So Warren Buffett is investing.
Yeah, he's not trading.
He's not trading.
He's investing. He's buying companies and he's growing his money that way.
Is it a different skill set?
Yeah, completely different. Investing is like, we could sit here and I can go, well, I think Tesla in the next 10 years will be a $3 trillion company. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable at buying Tesla at $200 per share, mm-hmm. right? And I leave it for 10 years. And in the 10 years, if Tesla goes to $400, $500, I have now profited that difference, right? So it's like, let's say if I buy Bitcoin right now, and Bitcoin is at $42,000 today, and it goes to $100,000, I hold through that, and essentially I'm investing in Bitcoin. Trading is me buying Bitcoin at $42,000 right now, and then 10 minutes later, selling it for $42,500 and making $500 on each Bitcoin I own. So mm-hmm. if I own 10 Bitcoins, I made $5,000. So that's essentially where I'm trading. So it is two different skill sets. It is also two different ways you're looking at the market. Investing, you're looking at the fundamentals. You're looking at the macros. You're looking at the economy, the cycles you're in. Trading, you're essentially looking at the short-term price movements and you're trying to profit off that.
Have you ever dabbled in crypto?
Yeah, I have crypto. I love Bitcoin, yeah.
I think
Bitcoin crypto is going to go way well above beyond 100K. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been an avid buyer of crypto since 2019. Late, but 2019 I've been buying, especially during this recent pulse to 20K, just parking money. And my thing is when I park money in it, I don't look.
Yeah.
And I don't care about the noise. So it's like right now everyone's talking about, oh, Bitcoin's at 42,000. And I'm like, well, I don't care because my plan is to hold it for 5-10 years. Mm-hmm. So I don't care what happens. Same thing with Tesla. I bought some Tesla on the recent move to about 120. And I think Tesla's at 2-something right now. It's doubled. And I don't care about the fluctuations because those are my investments. Those are long-term plays. Mm.
How long do you think it would take for somebody who's, if they are getting into it, for them to realistically become profitable with their trades?
I would say a realistic time frame, depending on the person, 1 to 2 years would be a good time to give themselves. Mm-hmm. I've seen people do it in 6 months. I've seen people do it in like 8 months, 7 months. But I think 1 to 2 years is a realistic time frame because you give yourself enough time to go through the experience, go through the mistakes, go through everything and kind of get the real world experience of it. Mm-hmm. And that's important. I don't think you can learn trading and go on the field and perform.
Mm-hmm. But by the sounds of it, it seems like trading is extremely stressful.
Yeah.
maybe even more stressful than investing.
Yeah, absolutely. So investing is just parking money.
Yeah.
Trading your, once again, you know, intraday movements.
Like you have to, surely you have to be on it all day, just like looking at.
So for me, I trade the US market. So for me, market opens at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. So in Dubai, it's like at the end of the day, right? So at 6:30 p.m., I start my day or start my session. And typically, I'm done by 8, maybe 9 p.m. So I trade the first hour to 2 hours. That's it. After that, I am done. I look for one or two good opportunities a day. Some days I find stuff. Some days I find nothing. Mm-hmm. And if I can find it, I'll take the trade. If I can't, I call it a day.
What does a good opportunity look like?
So good opportunity would look like something like yesterday. The market opens up. Right when we open up, about, I'd say, 20 minutes in, we get a big imbalance between buyers and sellers. Sellers essentially become in control of the action. They're more aggressive. So it's like with anything else, if sellers are in control of the price, they're aggressively selling. Mm-hmm. The supply exceeds the demand. The price goes down, right? Just like anything else. If there's a lot of people selling watches, a certain watch, the market can't eat up the supply. The prices of the watches will go down.
Yeah.
So yesterday was a good day of that because when the market opened, sellers were essentially in control of the price action. And since they were in control of the price action, for me, it was, hey, let me take this trade. I will risk this much. If I'm right, I can potentially make this much. So I'm playing it in terms of, hey, I'm risking a dollar to make two. Now, that depends on how much size I go in. So if I go in with, you know, 1,000 shares or 1,000 contracts, that $1 risk could be $10,000 and I could potentially make $20,000 to $30,000. Mm-hmm. So that just depends on how much capital I'm using, how much size I'm using, and how much risk I'm putting on. But that yesterday was a good day of that because I was able to read the market dynamic shift. And some days I can read it, some days I can't. And the days I can, I've gotten to a point of saying, well, I couldn't read what happened today, so I need to be okay on walking away.
Yeah. What's been your biggest win and your biggest loss? Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode.
My biggest loss, like I said, was my own capital in 2020 was 500,000. And I was up about 400 grand on that position. So that's when COVID happened. And in February of 2020, I shorted the market. So when the market goes down, you can still make money, right? So when the market started going down, I shorted it, right? And I was profiting on it. Now, what I did wrong is because I publicly posted about the position, my ego got in the way. I was like, oh, well, you know what? I'm not going to miss out on this great opportunity. I'm going to double down. So I doubled down on the position. When the position went against me, I added more, which is like against my rules. But that happened because, you know, I put the position out publicly and everyone's like, oh, he's wrong.
So how are you putting that out publicly?
Like tweeting about it, Instagram. Okay. Yeah. Like I was just like tweeting about it, or putting up it on Instagram. Hey, I'm short. So I was right at first. And then when it started going against me, I started adding more money. So now I'm already wrong in the position. Mm. My profits are going lower and lower and I keep adding to a point of I was in about 500K of my cash, plus I was up 400 grand. And that position essentially went to zero because I was playing options.
Yeah.
So I lost the full 900.
900?
Yeah.
Wow.
And at the point, it kind of hurt, but weirdly that was, it was a great thing that happened because it allowed me to take 2-3 months off and reflect. Every trade I took after that, by the way, every trade I took Tesla after that, I took Zoom after that, I took Zillow after that trades, every single trade wrong. Mm. Because now I wasn't trading the markets. I was trading my ego. Yeah. I was trading on like trying to make that money back. And I just kept losing. And then I was like, you know what? I got to take a month or two off because I'm going fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird as well because you publicly were showing everybody what you're doing. Yeah, so everybody was like, wow.
Yeah. So this guy just lost loads of money. And the thing is on social media, you can do well for 2, 3, 4 years. And the moment you have a bad period, everyone's like, oh, you suck.
Is that what you had at that point in time, reputation of being
it? It was like, oh, he sucks. He doesn't know how to trade a bear market because that was the first time market was going down since I traded.
Mm.
And it was like, oh, he doesn't know how to trade a bear market. And, you know, mentally, when you have somewhat of a following and what people say gets to you.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm not where I am now where things don't bother me anymore, where at that point it did.
Mm.
I was like 24, 25 at the time. So it's like when people are like, oh, he doesn't know how to trade a bear market. I'm like, fuck. Do I not know how to trade a bear market? Yeah. Do I really suck? And then you start fighting those thoughts and you just kind of push into it.
Are you still public with some of the trades you make now? Or are you more low key?
Now I'm a little bit more low key because of Blackline, because everything we do at the firm from like legal points of views, you can't disclose positions and things you're doing. But I am still, especially this year, I'm still posting my monthly profits, my monthly trades. Like I still do it for transparency purposes. Like, hey, this month, here's a picture of the broker statement, how much I made, how much I lost, just to showcase you guys. You should listen to me.
Mm-hmm. What was the biggest win you've had in a day?
The biggest win I had was a firm in 2021. It was probably about 700 grand. I had a swing position on a firm. This is before they announced their deal with Shopify and Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I got in at $60 and the stock went to like $150 in a short period of time. And that was also my two biggest back-to-back months. I had a $1.1 million month and a $1.2 million month that year, back-to-back. And most of those profits came just from a firm.
What percentage would you say that was down to luck versus actual strategic decision making?
I mean, I think I do believe luck plays a role in everything, but it's all a probability game, right? Mm. So I think I had the odds in my favor, and in that trade, the odds worked out,
mm-hmm.
right? I had my risk set out. Hey, I'm risking X amount if I'm wrong. These are my odds for the trade to working out, and the odds played out. So it's, to me, it's all a probability game. I don't think there's anything beyond, like, if I take on a trade tomorrow, I know absolutely nothing. No one knows anything. But if this trade, the probability and the odds look good,
yeah,
I will take it. I will put my risk out and I will take the trade.
Have you been able to make yourself almost recession-proof? Like, if something fucks up in the economy and everything goes down, yeah, are you able to kind of get away from being hit like everybody else?
Yeah. So like I said, with trading, you can make money when the market goes down.
Yeah.
So if we go in a recession, like, I don't really care because I can still make money.
Okay.
Right. So I can make money on the downside of the movement. So for trading, if you're investing, yeah, you get hit. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you are essentially trading on any move down, you can still profit off it. So me as a trader, I don't care from a trader's point of view, if you go in a recession, we don't go in a recession, I can profit both ways.
Mm-hmm. How are you able to deal with such high levels of stress on certain days? Like, how are you switching off?
So going to sauna, meditating, gym, going for walks, going for runs. I always say in 3, 4 years, I want to step away from trading. It's just one of those things that I don't see myself doing forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extremely stressful job. It's an extremely stressful career. It's helped me get to where I'm at and helped me get into other businesses. So I'm extremely grateful for it. But I do think as a vehicle, it's gotten me to this place. Now, the next stage in my life, maybe in 3, 4 years, I would look to leave it, especially if and when I have a family, just for the reason because it is very, very stressful. But I think I've also gotten to a point where the stress is not as much as it was in year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because I've understood that, hey, losses are part of the game. I will lose money in some trades. I will have up days. I will have down days. And I have to keep thinking about the next 1,000 trading days or 1,000 trades in general. And that allows me to just kind of stay calm. But I do have days where I lose my shit.
Mm. Could you just take all your money out and you'd be like, okay, yeah, I'm good now?
Yeah.
You're in the position
100%, where you can do that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But I guess, yeah. You're still, how old are you now? You're still
28.
Young. 28?
Yeah.
Jesus, you're in a very good position.
It's you know what it is? I think it's not the, for me, it's not the desire to make more money that allows me to keep playing. It's the desire to keep playing. Like I enjoy the game. It's not the game of trading, just the game of life.
Yeah, because I can tell just from looking at your social media, you're not really about the flexing life. You're not about the materialism. You're pretty humble. There's maybe a few little subtle flexes here and there in a private jet doing your thing, but like
yeah, it's you know I've met some really wealthy people, and I've realized people that have real wealth, it's not cars or stuff like that. It's more so access they have. It's more so like board seats they have in certain companies. It's things that they can make happen that an average person with a Lambo or whatever the case is can't do.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like they have shares in companies that are worth $1 billion or $2 billion, or they own companies that are $500-600 million, or they have controlling interest. Mm. Right. And to me, that's more amazing and cool than like, oh, I have a Lambo. It's like everyone has a Lambo nowadays, essentially. You know what I mean? On social media, at least.
Yeah, I think I saw a caption where you were looking at a boat and you were like, you don't really care about being in a position where you have one yourself, but to be in a position where if you wanted to, you could.
Yeah.
You're in a position where you're capable of buying that.
Yeah, that's the idea. So for me, it's like at this stage, I would, even if I had the money to spend $200 million on a yacht, I wouldn't want to get one. Mm. But I would like to be in a position to be able to buy it. And when I see things like that, it's not, oh man, that's a yacht, that's so cool. It's more so like, you know, the effort and the planning and the dedication and everything required to get there is like the cool part to me. That's like the amazing part. So when I see people achieve this massive level of success or build this cool software company or whatever the case is, I'm like, wow, that's cool of how you were able to build a team of 1,000 people and get to that level. Mm. It's not the cars and stuff that really inspire me. It's more so like, what did this guy do to build that great company or build that great thing? Because building at a high level is very, very difficult. Because now you have to deal with people, culture, different competitors, different stuff at such a granular scale. And that's the game where it's like, okay, that's fun. Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing with the money that you are making and have made? What is your thought process? Because, I mean, you could ultimately just put it all back into the market. So do you have a system where you're like, okay, a certain percentage is going to go here, a certain percentage I'm going to park in Bitcoin or whatever, a certain percentage I'm going to spend on myself? Like, how are you deciding what to do with it?
So I don't have a percentage-wise. I know some people follow like, hey, I'm going to spend 10% or 5% a month. I don't really follow that. I invest a lot of my money back into the markets, back into buying stocks, buying Bitcoin. Like I own a ton of Bitcoin and I've been buying and buying and buying. So a lot of my money is going back into the markets in terms of investment. Now where I'm at, I've parked a lot of money in my software business because we didn't raise any money at all. I didn't want anyone from the outside coming in and, you know, having to attend to them or whatever the case is. I wanted to stay as a fully owned business. So I invested quite amount of money in that to launch that, start that and fund that. And same thing.
It's 100% yours?
100%. Yeah. No outside investors, no VC firms, nothing.
Not spread it between family, nothing?
So I have two sisters. They have equity. Mm-hmm. So it's like a family-based business. So it's me and my two sisters that own it. But outside of us, I've gotten offers, and for me, it's
are they into trading?
They're not into trading.
Or you're just a very generous brother?
No, they work for their equity. They've worked really, really hard for it, and they're on the company. Like one of my sisters, she handles everything from the marketing growth, and the other sister handles everything from the development. And they're young, so they've learned on the go. And you know, from the outside, it may look like, oh, it's a brother. He's being really generous, and I'm like, if you ask them how it is working with me, it's fucking hell.
Yeah.
Like I'm a great brother, but when it comes to work, I have certain expectations I have. And it's like, okay, it's your birthday. It doesn't fucking matter. It's your birthday. You want to go out, it doesn't matter. We have these things we need to do and you have to kind of get to it. Mm-hmm. And since the start of the company, they've both been avid people working to building. So they deserve it. They deserve the peace they have. And they're actively, and they've made my life very easy to be able to go operate Blackline, to be able to go and operate, you know, be able to go trade and get involved in other stuff because they're handling the two main important components and driving them.
Mm-hmm. What are they in Dubai? Are they
no, they're coming back and forth. So my family's in New York.
Yeah.
I try to get them to come to Dubai, and my mom and dad are like, no, we're set here, we're good. So they're in New York right now.
Why did you choose Dubai? Because one thing I've noticed about Dubai is I don't see many American people here.
The reason you don't see American people is because we don't get a tax benefit.
Yeah.
So we if you have a U.S. passport, you still get hit with the U.S. tax. So it doesn't make sense for us to go here. It makes sense for us to go to Puerto Rico. Right. So for me, the main reason was after 25, 26, I kind of got a little bit complacent. Like I started traveling, you know, just going all over the world, which was cool.
I don't think there's anything wrong with doing
that.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with it, right? Yeah. But then I kind of hit a wall of like, I got really bored and I was like, okay, well, what's the next stage in my life?
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to go on like a 2-3 year sprint of just building, of just like head down, build. And then I want to take a 2-year break again. And it was more so to where can I go to A, build Blackline? Where can I go to get this new momentum push in life? Mm. So I'm a big fan of whenever you feel stuck, just get up, go on a plane and leave.
100%.
Like that has helped me every single time.
Yeah.
Right. So coming to Dubai, I was like, okay, new time zone on a whole new different side of the world. Good weather, great people. You know, you come into an area where everyone is trying to build. Everyone is trying to, essentially not everyone, but a lot of people trying to grow and build.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, let's go try it.
Yeah.
And I've always come to Dubai at least 2 to 3 times a year. Right. So it was essentially a place where I've gotten really comfortable with. So I was like, hey, let me go stay there for 2-3 years. And after 2-3 years, I don't know, maybe I go somewhere else. But for 2-3 years, it was just, hey, I need a momentum push in my life. And I think Dubai is going to be that place.
Yeah. You said that you still don't really feel like you've fit in yet, or it feels like home.
It doesn't feel like home yet for two reasons. One, it feels like Dubai feels like it's like when you go to college and everyone is like dorming and everyone is from other parts of the world coming together, essentially. And everyone is like, no one is really from here. Very few people. So it's like everyone from different parts of the world are coming here that have no history. Like you can't go and say, well, that's where I went to high school. Mm-hmm. Well, 10 years ago, that's where this happened. Very few people can say that about here. So it's like hard finding that home feeling here yet for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I haven't found it just yet.
Yeah. As I said to you before, it takes time. I would say maybe even, like I said, it took 2 years for me to find like a solid group of friends and to have like my network and know the places where I like to go to, where I don't like to go to, and just get into your routine. But I don't know how long that's going to last. Like I might in a couple of years time just be sick of it. Like people keep asking me, well, are you going to stay here forever? I'm like, I don't know. Like I'm like you, I've not bought property here. I rent.
Yeah.
So I like that peace of mind knowing exactly. If something happens here, or for whatever reason I need to be somewhere else, I can just pick up and go like very easily.
No, exactly. That's exactly why I didn't buy anything here. And I was like, you know what, let me buy something. And then I'm like, well, it's going to create an attachment of like, I have to be here. I own something. And for me to leave, it creates more of a hassle.
Yeah.
So it's like, just, you know, avoid it. And that's it.
Yeah. I have one thing you said that was funny is that you're not that big on networking with people.
Yeah, not, no.
Which is interesting because a lot of people who come to Dubai, they come to network. So why what's your view on it?
So my thing on networking is, you know, I've came to this realization this year a lot, especially after I came to Dubai and everyone's like, hey, let's hang out. Let's go get dinner. And it's like, you can't try to please everyone and try to meet people and just for the sake of meeting them. It's like, okay, what are you trying to achieve? And for me, I have no interest in making friends. I'm not mm-hmm. in like a place, well, I want to make a bunch of friends. I have certain goals where it's like, hey, this is time that I spend with my family. This is time that I want to build this part of my company. This is what I want to build with this part of my company. If I meet someone, can you add value in any of these areas?
Yeah.
Right? If you can add value in these areas, I don't care who you are. I don't have interest in you know, meeting you, networking with you, because, you know, you can meet great people that are very, you know, big on social media, but when you look at your worlds and their worlds, you're like, well, there's nothing that we can do together or benefit off. Yeah, we can have conversations and we can share ideas, but ideas are good when you need ideas.
Yeah.
But if you're building head down, just execute on what you're doing. You don't need distractions of, oh man, this guy's doing this, let me switch up my game plan. Mm. You have a game plan, put your head down and just keep going. And most of the time, some people that you are networking with, it's just draining.
Yeah.
You're giving them so much. And it's not that you don't want to give, it's just, you're talking, they walk out of the conversation with more value than you do.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's okay, but on a grand scheme of things, it's draining. So it's like recently, there's a few people that came to Dubai and they hit me up and I feel bad about it, but I'm like, listen, for me to hang out with you or for me to see you, I have to stop doing X, Y, and Z. Like my niece is there in Dubai and it's like, okay, well, I'm working, I'm doing this. So I'm not gonna hang out with this guy who's a trader or whatever, this guy over my nieces. Mm. Like that's the family time of people that I want to see. And if I have to feel like, oh, I got to see this guy or I got to do this, it's a no for me.
You know what's weird about Dubai? I don't know if it's just Dubai or whether it just happens when you get older, but the time goes by quick.
Oh, yeah,
a
bro.
Day is gone in like a second.
Bro, it's I thought it was just me. Like this whole year, I remember I came here in February and yesterday I'm like, shit, we're going into 2024. What happened?
Yeah.
And I'm like, is it Dubai or is it me? I'm like, I don't know what it is, but this year just ultimately flew by so fast.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the thing. If you are going to meet up with somebody, that's a big chunk of your day gone.
Yeah.
Like, I know I've met up with some people or I've just done some social things. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, I've lost the day.
Yeah, here. Yeah.
Like, and I think that as you grow, you got more things going on.
Yeah.
That your time becomes a lot more valuable.
Yeah, no, exactly. And me, I'm naturally introvert.
Yeah.
Right. I have days where I don't want to see anyone. I want to just be in bed or be in the office by myself. And then I'll have days where I want to be around people. Mm. But naturally, I would prefer to not be around people than to be around people.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So you're naturally more introverted. The trading has been going very successfully for you. So why step into social media? Like, why are you putting the time and effort into the high quality videos that you've been putting out on YouTube? What's the strategy behind that?
So one thing, right? I'm spending no more than 4 hours a week on that. It looks like I'm spending way more. I'm spending 4 hours a week on it, right? So every short that I have is clipped up from, like, I'd spend no more than 4 hours.
Yeah.
And those 4 hours are every Saturday from 1 to 4 or 5 PM. I have one or two YouTube ideas.
Yeah.
I write down the bulletin points. I think about it. I'm like, okay, got it. Hook. Cool. I sit in front of the camera. I have my guy. He records me. Do video one or video two. Done.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of time, it's only, it looks like a lot more,
yeah,
but it's only for maybe 5 hours tops.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, I have a few reasons why. One reason is Iman. I will give him his credit. I have been following Iman for a really long time and I've seen him, bro, in front of my eyes go from 200K to 3 million in like a year. You know, to me, that was really inspiring. I never thought you could grow that fast.
Yeah, people are always like, oh, I'm too late to the games. Like, it's not possible.
Yeah, yeah. So when I saw him do that, I was like, holy shit. And I told him this. I was like, bro, like, you inspired me to take the content game seriously because of how fast you've grown. That was one spark of it. The second component of it is I saw a lot of misinformation about social media. I mean, not social media, about trading. And I was like, well, you know, people are giving new upcoming traders the wrong information.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I make things that give people value, right? And now, you know, some people may be saying, no, he's selling a course, he's selling this. If you go on my YouTube videos, I have no link for a course, no link for anything at all. It's just, I'm not pitching anything. Hey, here you go. This is what I think this is. This is what I think that is. Learn from it. Now, there is a benefit to it too. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm here to help people 100%. There's a grand benefit. The benefit is the more influence you can have, and I've seen that, at the end of the day, you're able to make more money, whatever the case is. So the benefits I get from there are TradeZilla. I have a software business that we have grown tremendously. And one of the reasons we've grown is my socials have grown. Mm-hmm. So my social growth has, you know, contributed to that. Second is when we are looking for traders on Blackline, we're able to get a wider reach.
Yeah.
Right. So it allows both things to work hand in hand. And then also the third part of having influence in the trading space.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever space you're in is massive. Mm-hmm. The doors they can open up, the opportunities they can open up are just endless. So for me, it's like, okay, well, if I can start building now, it does take 4 hours of my time a week. Why don't I start building now? What is it going to take? Just 4 hours? Sure, have a process, follow the process, follow the system. Now, if it took 20, 30 hours a week, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. It's just, I can't.
Yeah.
But 4 hours, even a day out of the week, for the returns and the growth that we're getting is a no-brainer.
Did you have any initial obstacles when you started? Like speaking up from the camera or anything?
Initially, yeah, I didn't like it. I've always struggled, but when I took it serious, I was just kind of like, look at the camera and act like you're talking to 18-year-old Umar.
Yeah.
That's been like my mission statement. You're talking to 18-year-old Umar that wants to get in trading and you're giving him advice.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I look at the camera, it's like I'm talking to my younger self and whatever advice I'm giving, it's not like, don't gatekeep this, don't hold this. No, just give him the advice, give him the raw, honest truth. And if it is raw, honest truth, people will, you know, relate to it and it'll do well if it's supposed to.
And you'll be surprised when you actually really know what you're talking about, it's actually quite easy. You will speak quite confidently.
Yeah.
Like the moment I've ever tried to talk about something I don't understand, I'm just like, the yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, let's not go there.
Yeah.
People will call you out for your bullshit as well if you don't know what you're talking about.
I think the confidence comes from the success, right? So it's like going into that, it's like affirmations. I think affirmations are bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, I have people talk about, oh, you need to look in the mirror. I'm like, no, just if you are able to perform well at whatever job or whatever thing you're doing, you will have confidence. Like I have massive confidence because I understand trading. I have success to back it up. So if I need to talk about something trading related, I won't have a hesitation. But if I go into like, let's say bodybuilding or clothing brands or nutrition, I'm lost. I have no idea.
Yeah. With if you can build up a big following, but at the same time, get a lot of trust from those followers, then the sky's the limit with almost anything you decide to do because you've got so many eyeballs and then all those eyeballs, like they trust you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the game is easy in one way because you realize how other people play it and they play it really wrong. A lot of people, especially in the trading space, they focus, and I'm pretty sure you can probably relate to in your space, they focus more so on being an influencer than actually being good at the craft.
Yeah.
So my thing is everything I'm doing in my life operates off me being a good trader. So the first priority for me is to make sure I'm still a good trader every day. I can still make money every day, or not every day, but every month I can produce results. If those two things work hand in hand, the influencer part, if you want to label it, the following comes with it. But if I put all my focus in marketing and making great content and spending 70% of my time on you know, just content and looking good, I can't back it up.
Yeah.
But if I focus 70, 80% of my time on being good, then looking good comes naturally. Mm-hmm. So I've seen people play this notion of marketing. They spend 80, 90% of their time in marketing and 10% on the product or themselves, right? And it's the same philosophy like Elon follows with Tesla. Build great products, build great services, and customers will come.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing that we followed with TradeZilla. Like, yes, I have a brand and that's helped. But till today, we've spent $0 on marketing at all. And we've grown tremendously outside of my brand itself.
So what is TradeZilla?
So TradeZilla is essentially the QuickBooks of trading. I don't know if you're familiar with QuickBooks. So it's like it allows traders to see the stats, see the analytics, see their performance, backtest, see everything about their trading in one place, and then also if they want to take notes, they want to journal, just one place that they can do everything.
This is an app.
Yeah. So it's an app where customers or users or traders can go to, and they can connect their broker account, and they can see all of their stats, all of their performance. What days they perform well? What days they perform bad? What is their trade expectancy? What is their average win to loss ratio? All of these interesting stats that, when you talk to some traders, they have no idea about. If you ask them, "What's your trade expectancy?" "Oh, I have no idea, but I've been trading for 3 years." So it's like, imagine going to a business owner and saying, "Hey, what's your highest item that you sell out on?" They're like, "I have no idea." So it's like, wait, are you really involved in your business? Do you really care, or are you just winging it? So trading, it's the same kind of parallel thing where people wing it and they don't have this foundation of tracking their data, tracking their, you know, ideas, thoughts, trades. So the mission with that was, the big key takeaway I've had in trading was journaling. Was tracking my data. I'm big on tracking. I'm big on writing things down. I'm big on just explaining and detangling my mind, right? And that's helped me in every aspect of my life. So even sometimes if I run into problems, I have a section of my note app. I open up and I just keep typing. Yeah. This is a problem, this is blah, blah, blah. And like, you'd be surprised, 10, 20 minutes in sometimes, you're like, aha, I got it. It makes sense, right? So I apply that concept in business, in my personal life, and then also trading. Mm-hmm. And in trading, when I have the stats in front of me, right, very similar to WAP, when you have that status, I don't know if it's WHOOP or WAP, whatever, yeah, WAP or WHOOP, when you have that data.
The data that it presents you with is crazy, and it just keeps...
And it keeps you accountable.
It's one of the main reasons why I stopped drinking.
This is fucking it up. So it keeps you accountable. So it's like, as a trader, when you can see your data day in and out, you're like, oh shit, I got to stop doing this. I got to start doing this more. This is the time I've traded best under. So it's...
You want it to be like the tool that every trader should have.
Yes, 100%. Because a lot of traders, especially in the social media world, don't focus on that. So when you go to any prop firm, like a real trading floor, a real trading firm, whatever the case is, they all track their data. They're required to have a process of journaling and tracking their data and tracking the analytics. But then when you go into like the retail side of like social media traders, no one does it because they don't trade. They're not real traders.
Yeah.
So I saw that disconnect and I'm like, why aren't people doing this? Because to me, it comes second nature. Like, it makes sense to do it. So when I saw that, it people aren't doing it, I was like, okay, well, hey, let's start one. Like, let's build one. And the thing is, I have no tech background.
Yeah.
Absolutely zero.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's your experience being building an app from scratch?
Zero. And people from the outside are going to go and say, well, you have money, you throw money at it, and it's solved. I wish that was true, because that's what I did. So we started the project in 2020. This is the same year that I had my biggest loss. Like, everything just, you know, went bad at the same time. We started the idea 2020. We worked with this agency, which was a bad move, and they built a shitty product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as,
how much did you put into it?
So initially, I probably spent $200,000. That was like just starting off.
Is that normal for a typical app, or was that above?
So for something that we were building, I think it was fair. Because it wasn't just a mobile app.
It'd be a complex.
Yeah, it wasn't just so we don't have a mobile app yet. It's only web based, right? So it was a little bit complex. But
why is that? Because you just assume that most traders are going to be on the computer anyway.
It's difficult to build web and mobile at the same time. Mm. So from like an efficiency point of view, it made sense to build the web application, get that right, and then go into app. Now we're going into app, right? Because now if we build something on the web and we build it on the mobile, from what we built in 2020, 2021, 2022, we have changed so much. Mm. And the changes are required in two dynamics, which becomes difficult and expensive.
Well, the first version of anything you bring out is going to be absolutely turd. Same thing with my fitness app. When I think back to how it was originally, it was so bad. There were so many bugs. It was actually very stressful for me. I didn't even want to promote it because I was not happy with the end product. I was like, this is bullshit. Mm-hmm. I kept saying to the developers I work with, I was like, they were like, you need to push it more. And I said, well, I'm not pushing it because the basics are not even working. So how about you go and fix it? Then I'm going to start promoting it. And then it wasn't until, I think it was like maybe end of 2021, 2022, where I don't know what they'd done, but they'd finally sorted out a lot of the bugs and it was actually pretty damn good. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. So now I'll naturally promote it because I don't like promoting bullshit.
Yeah, it's a dilemma founders have when it's your own thing. Mm. You don't want to push out something that you don't feel confident in because you don't want to push out shit to your audience, which is great and says a lot about you, because most people in a position would say, fuck it, whatever, people are going to buy it anyways. Yeah. And they'll push it out, you know? And I think it comes from people wanting excellence and caring about your reputation and caring about your audience and not trying to rip them off.
And I'm really in touch with the users and the community as well. So at the moment, what it has been for the past few years is predominantly been on Facebook. But anybody who has had any issues or want any improvements, like, I am there, like, monitoring it and replying to people because I genuinely want it to be the best app that it can be. And even things which I take for granted because I've been doing the fitness thing for so long, I don't have the same mindset or thought process as a complete beginner. So when they're giving me suggestions, I'm like, oh, like, I never really thought about that. Like, I was like, surely it's obvious. And apparently it's not obvious. So I guess it'd be a similar thing for you. Like when there's people who are almost newbies in the training scene, you know, you'll need to put yourself in their shoes and think, okay, well, what is it that they will really want from this?
Yeah, and what I've done with that is I've done a lot of calls with users early on, and even now sometimes I'll hop on calls. I've done calls with users to get an idea of how they use the platform. I've done customer support tickets. As a CEO of a company, it's like, you're doing customer support tickets, and it's like, we have this thing in our company that everyone is required to do customer support at times. Mm-hmm. Because we need to understand what problems our customers are going through, what issues they're going through, and it has to work from a CEO level to someone that is working, the head of marketing, to head of growth, whatever the case is, to understand how things are happening. Mm-hmm. So me, early on, I got on calls with customers, and I was like, holy shit, I didn't ever think someone would want to use this that way. Because I have my own way, and my way isn't everyone's way or isn't the right way. It's what works for me. Mm-hmm. But then there's a way of how beginners are going to, like you mentioned, are going to use it. So I've learned a lot through open criticism / feedback on the product. And our product from 2020, and we launched in 2022, has evolved massively.
Do you still work with external developers or do you have in-house?
So we worked with this team that built Calendly.
Oh, yeah.
So they are one of the teams we worked with, and I was able to get 4 to 5 of their developers to us in-house full-time now.
Okay.
Right. So it transitioned into.
How do you manage that?
So I got, I mean, they're still part of the team that the
Calendly.
Agency. Yeah. They're not Calendly. They're still part of the agency. So the Calendly worked with an agency called Railsware.
Okay.
And Railsware has those engineers, some of the engineers, and we were able to have them as our, like our full-time people now.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have, you know, constant communication with the CEO, all great people, phenomenal team, and we have had great success together. Yeah. But for me, it was a lot of learning how to lead a team, right? So going back to starting TradeZilla a little bit, was the challenge I had was when I started TradeZilla, I was 25, right? And up until then, trading, I had courses and all that stuff at that time. And doing that business was very easy. I don't think having a course business is hard. I don't like, you know, unless you're doing it at a macro level of $20-$40 million. Sure, now you need systems and you need teams and all that stuff. But if you just have a course,
it's like a YouTube channel behind a paywall.
Yeah, you know what I mean. That's essentially what it is. So it's not. It's a very easy business, and I've always had this notion of I don't want to be a course seller. I don't want to be known as a course seller, and I want to have a legitimate business.
Yeah.
And having a legitimate business to me was getting into SaaS. So when I first got into it that year, we kind of had a fallout with the developers. We had a year of off period. So September 2020 till 2021 of summer, we had no teams, no one on board. The struggle I went through on building was how do I go from a mindset of a trader to now learning these skills of being a proper CEO, leading a team, learning how software teams are supposed to be ran, learning what a sprint is, learning how the design process is supposed to look like, learning how product management is supposed to look like, learning how, you know, Q&A is supposed to work. Mm. So I spent time during that 2021 period and 2022 period of just learning as much as I can. And the learning process was, you know, being able to get myself as a 25-year-old to 26 to 27 to 28 now to grow as a leader, because I didn't have the proper leadership skills at 25. I wasn't the same person I am. So there was a lot of learning and hurdles I had to go through to be able to build TradeZilla into the company it is now, not even just from a tech point of view, but more so as an operational point of view, right? In terms of how do we make sure we hit our KPIs? How do we develop KPIs? Like for some people, what the hell is a KPI, right? So it's like, how do we develop these things? How do we make sure we have the proper goals? How do we make sure we are growing?
By KPI, you mean key person of interest?
Key performance indications or indicators, whatever you want to call it. So looking at those of like, what are the important things we got to focus on?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if someone, once again, that has no idea of how SaaS works, how tech works, it was very, very difficult to a point where honestly, at I think 2021, I thought about quitting.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, fuck this. I don't have control over the development and I can't put the pieces together. So I don't know what
That's
to
so
do.
It's so frustrating when you want it to work
yeah.
a certain way
mm-hmm.
and just
it doesn't. And you can't control it.
Because those guys that are building it don't have a clue about trading.
Yeah.
They don't know how.
Exactly. So it was very difficult. But I learned like developers are kind of like you have to tell them A plus A equals B. And you have to kind of lay it out from the design process. And the design process, the UI has to be laid out really, really well to explain what everything is. And then they have to understand the logic.
Yeah.
So I started learning the proper ways to communicate with developers, how every developer, you know, is responsible for different parts. Some developers are good on back end. Some developers are good on infrastructure. How do you maximize them?
Mm-hmm.
So those things were learned. And as I learned them, you know, before I learned them, like I said, in 2021, it was just kind of like, should I keep doing this? Because you also look at it from like, okay, I'm taking away a lot of time and energy and I'm burning money in like...
Oh, yeah, an app will...
you know, yeah, so you're burning money. You're burning money and it's like...
What's and at this point, did you have people signing up?
Or no, I didn't launch yet. We launched in 2022 of February.
Okay.
So we started the project in 2020. We stopped the project in September of 2021. We restarted the project in July of 2021. So we had a year about of off period.
Uh-huh.
And then July till January, February, we fixed up the platform because existing team, they screwed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was like, there was no proper testing. There was no way to scale the product. And my thing is every time someone does some work that I'm not familiar with, I always get multiple opinions. So even if I go to a doctor, I'm never listening to one guy or one person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have to go to 3-4 people and see what's your opinion, what's your opinion. So when I got the code, I went to 3-5 agencies or people in general, CFOs, I mean CTOs and so on. And I asked them like, hey, what do you guys think? I'll pay you for it. And I paid people a bunch of money to review the code and all of their opinions and feedback lined up where it's not scalable. There's no proper testing done. This is not done correctly. You can have issues here. So I was like, okay, so let me get rid of this team and find a new team. And then finding new teams, what I did was I had from January till March of 2021, I probably interviewed over 150 different people / companies. And my thing was go into those interviews with and knowing I know what I'm talking about, but let them talk and learn from them. Because you can get on a call with someone in their industry, let them explain things and go deeper and deeper in questions, and they'll explain things without knowing. You have no idea what you're talking about, and then you keep learning. So after 40, 50 interviews, I'm like, okay, I understand this. I understand we have to do unit testing. What is unit testing? So I started learning through these interviews, but it was a hell period of like, shit, do I keep doing this? And I'm like, well, I'm a trader, not this. This is not what I want to do.
You're a master of app development now.
Yeah, now I'm like, I can start an app or a company very, very well. But yeah, it was hectic. But then in 2022, the key pivotal thing was I was in the same place as you where I didn't want to launch. Because I was like, we had a good product that, not that we had bugs, but we didn't have everything I wanted. I was like, well, I need this, I need that. And my sister, Hatija, she goes, well, we're not waiting anymore. We got to launch. This is an MVP. This is not the final product. Yeah. And you know, when I look back at it, if she didn't push me at that moment, we would have still not launched. Because for me, it's like, I'm like naturally a perfectionist where it's like, it has to be like this. It has to be like that.
Yeah.
And she just one day just signed people up. And I was like, oh shit, you signed people up? Yeah, she's like, we launched. That's it, we're signing people up. And then the feedback we started getting gave me like this confidence because, you know, you have these expectations for things on your own where you're like, no, this is not good. But when you hear it from people, like, wait, hold on. It is good, it is effective, people are liking it. And then from there, the crazy part is 3 months in, we were profitable.
And was this from just word of mouth? Like how hard?
My social media, I didn't push super hard though. Yeah. It was like invite only. We didn't like let everyone on because we don't support every broker. 3 months, it became profitable. And 2 years in, we're going to make 2 years in this February, upcoming February, we are going to cross 8 figures in ARR, which is like on a 2 year SaaS company. You're profitable. You spend $0 on ads. You play off valuation. You're going at a 7 to 12x, 70 to 100. You know what I mean?
That's just all organic.
All organic. We spend $0 in ads, like zero. The product is so good where once you use it as a trader, you're like, I need it. And the thing is, we haven't tapped into crypto. We haven't tapped into more forex brokers. We haven't tapped into more stock brokers, future brokers. So it's like next year. We have this huge area of just growth.
Are you happy with where the app is at now?
100%. Like, yeah. There's still like, I wish we have this. I wish we have that.
Yeah, but it's just, come with time,
right? You know, but where we're at now, I'm super confident. And we've scaled the team, development team, to about 11, 12 people now to grow massively in 2024. And my thing is, up until now, I have not taken a dollar out. I'm not going to take a dollar out. I'm not, like, I have not seen a dollar from the company. It's all in the bank. And I'm doubling down on just growing the best trading tool that helps traders become profitable. Mm-hmm. That is just like my long shot game plan. I got my sisters on board too. And I was like, listen, we're going to take a big swing with this. These are things we're going to launch in 2024 that I don't really want to say right now just because I don't want competition to get involved, but they're going to be massive, right? And for us to take these massive bets to go to a 300-500 million valuation, these are things we have to do. And we're going to take this big hit. It's either we go here or, you know, we call it quits, one or the other. There's no in-between. I don't want to settle for $100 million company, which sounds crazy. I want to try to grow to $400-500 million, which we can see as something that's possible.
And then what? If that goes to plan, which by the sounds of it could probably happen pretty quickly.
I would say 2-3 years if we yeah. keep at the pace we're at. Then I see. I don't think about exits. I know people think about exits.
Yeah.
I don't think about it. I think about, you know, when that time comes, I may not want to sell. When that time comes, I may be done and I may sell. I don't know. But for me, my only agenda and goal is to be focused on the bigger picture and what we're building. And whatever comes alongside with that, be it an exit, be it a sale, whatever the case may be, fine. If not, we just keep building a great tool and everything else comes along with it.
So how much trading are you going to be doing in 2024? Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, The more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bioniq. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. Once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bioniq Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more or give them a try, head over to bioniq.com, but you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode.
Same trading I'm doing now. So I'm able to manage TradeZilla at this point by spending about 30 hours of my time. Mm-hmm. So like I said, that's where my two sisters, Hadija and Sarah, kick in massively because they're running the two biggest departments, mm-hmm. right? So I'm not running those departments. Yes, I'm involved in some of the choices that we make and so on. My big responsibility on the product, and I hate the word CEO, is more so the product aspect. I'm heavily involved in the product. I care about the product. I'm a trader. I understand the product. That's something I don't want to give up.
Well, I guess when you have the right team in place, you don't really need to be too heavily involved.
Exactly.
They're doing what they need to do. They're running it. They're scaling it.
Exactly.
And you're just making sure the app is doing what it's supposed to
do. I have to just make sure I keep trading. If I keep trading and I keep performing well, and I, you know, which I am using my app, that mm-hmm. helps. I keep going into some of the ideas, some of the product development. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like I said, one sister manages the whole development team. Right, everything we're doing on a sprint-to-sprint basis, design team. The other sister is helping everything on growth, marketing. Mm-hmm. And the results speak for it. So going back to, hey, the equity thing, they're deserving of it because they've built something that I don't think I could have done by myself without their help.
Are you having much say in the marketing outside of your organic traffic? Or are you going to hire a team to just do that thing?
We're going to do it in-house. So 2024, we're going to go into marketing and spend money on ads and things like that.
Do we get influencers involved?
We're partnering with people. So the past 3 months, we started partnering with some influencers. Yeah. Massive success. Like some of our partners are making a good amount of money month to month because we're doing rev shares with some of them. So it's like, if you come on, you win and we win. Mm-hmm. We don't want to just be like, hey, we're going to pay you a small amount. We're going to pay you a good amount. If you are able to get us customers, as long as they stay signed up and they pay us monthly, they'll pay you monthly too.
Is it the same as affiliates or?
Yeah, essentially, yeah. But we're very careful of who we make a partner because in partners will give bonuses, we'll give a higher payout because you are now representing the brand and you're also representing the idea of journaling.
Yeah,
we don't want to get someone as a partner that doesn't journal, that doesn't track the data, and it's just, hey, I'm going to sell to my audience. We want to actually follow our mission of building the right tool for traders.
Mm-hmm. Damn, that sounds exciting. And then at the same time, you've got the Blackline trading.
Yeah. So I get, so
where is this at?
So the Blackline trading is here in Dubai.
Right? And how is it at this point in time? Is it it's up and running?
So we have put out applications and we are going to start taking applications possibly. And we're going to start bringing people on in January. Mm. So mid-January to end of January, we're going to start getting traders on board.
All working in...
In the body, office. So right now it'll
be like Wolf of Wall Street style.
Kind of, yeah.
Shouting on the phones.
Probably, yeah, probably, right? So we're aiming for end of January. Hopefully, you know, it's just, there was a lot of legal things we ran into here that I wasn't aware of. I thought it was a simple process. But the moment you're involved in anything trading-wise, they want this license, that license. So it took longer than usual, mm-hmm. right? Also, there's a lot of other things that kind of played a role in it that I didn't kind of anticipate. We were planning to launch by September and that just kind of blew up.
So it's interesting because it sounds like the TradeZilla thing is really going to pop off. It's already profitable.
Yeah.
So why are you doing this as well as
TradeZilla? So like I was saying, I have this thing where if I stop doing Blackline and everything else, I have a lot of free time. And I've gotten to a point where it's like, hey, next 2 or 3 years, I want to go head down mm-hmm. and I want to operate at the highest level possible. Mm-hmm. And my thing is the toughest part about any business is building the framework, mm-hmm. building the foundation. Once you have a foundation with the right team, you should not be spending a lot of time on the business.
Yep.
Right? Your job should be to work not in the business, but on the business.
Yeah, organizing the team.
Exactly. So if you can put great people together, like with TradeZilla, I'm very comfortable with the team we have. Your time involvement there goes very minimal. Like this week, this past 10 days, I've probably spent 4 or 5 hours in TradeZilla. Now, next 2-3 weeks, my time is going to go back up because we're launching a big feature. So my time is adjusted based on what's going on, but it doesn't go beyond 20, maybe 30 hours a week.
You know what the funny thing is about social media as well is as your presence gets bigger and bigger, you automatically just find it much easier to find talent.
Yeah.
You get all these people 100%. Who just like, they admire you, they've been watching your stuff for the past 5 years, and they just want to be involved with whatever 100%. It is that you're
doing. And those are the best people to hire.
Yeah.
Even for me hiring, I don't care about talent. Like, yes, talent is important, but I care more about how you can fit into the culture, how you can fit into the organization. And if you are someone that can immediately work your way up, right? Because I've realized people that have talent and they don't have the other qualities, it's hard to develop the other qualities. People can develop talent and get good at their job, right? So it's like finding those people that are passionate about the mission, passionate about working alongside with you and the team and building is way better than some guy that's going to come in and think he's a big shot.
Yeah. So in the future with the Blackline trading, you'll almost be at a point where I could go to you guys and be like, hey, here's this amount of money. Can you go off and do your thing? Like, is that how it's going to work?
So right now I'm just deploying my capital. I don't know if I want to raise outside capital. It's kind of crossed my mind. So right now it's just my capital, my own money that I'm going to be deploying for the traders to trade. Mm-hmm. It's not outside capital at all.
Okay.
I may consider outside capital. I've spoken to people that kind of stirred up the idea, but it wouldn't be unless we have 2 years of consistency and growth.
Because you don't want to piss people off.
I think there's the moment you take someone's money, you essentially kind of work for them in a way, right? If I take your money and you give me $2 million, $3 million, I don't want to get emails. I don't want to get harassed. I don't want that. Now, there's ways to offset that, of course, but it's like before we do that and we try to take a big swing, the team component has to be aligned, right? I have to have the right people in our team to be able to handle everything that's happening. I don't want to be an operator. I don't want to be a CEO. Like, I hate being a CEO.
Yeah.
I want to get the right people to operate, the right people to execute the vision, and to be able to take the company to where it needs to go, right?
How are you teaching these people then? Like, how, because I mean, ideally, you want to have a load of clones that are basically you.
Yeah.
So how are you going to train them up to be as good as you?
Sure. So we have programs in place that we're going to give them. That's number one. But prior to that, we have one trader, Noman. He's going to be running the floor. He's the guy that's running everything with me. And then we're looking to bring this trader on. He, in my opinion, is a very low-key, one of the best traders like that people have not discovered. He is maybe going to join us. So you have, you know, these 2-3 good traders that are going to run a group of 10, 20 people, it allows the system to be scalable. Now you can scale that to another 10, 20 people. Mm-hmm. But it starts from those 2-3 people that we have as an internal team. It doesn't start from me. Like I can't sit here and commit and say, I'm going to spend 70 hours a week working with traders and help developing them up. That I can't do that. It's not possible, right? But let's say Noman and this new trader that we might bring on, them two together can do it. Because they have the results, they have the backing, they have everything, they have the proof to be able to drive traders up. Mm-hmm. But in terms of teaching them, most of it is like, hey, these are educational videos, and then these are real life examples that you're supposed to do to apply what you've learned. And then you put them on like a 3-month trial to take trades, practice, and see what their performance is like. Because most traders, their problem isn't they don't know how to trade. Their problem is mental, or their problem is they don't have capital. So some traders can make, let's say, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 a year, but you take the same strategies, you make some tweaks, you kind of put a boss over them, they'll trade better.
Yeah.
Because the thing with trading is, because you don't have a boss, which sounds lucrative, it's also bad because people that need a structure and they need a boss, it's self-destruction for them. But if you put someone on top of them that's saying like, hey, you've been trading bad, we're going to reduce your risk, you're going to be required to do A and B before you can increase risk, or the market conditions for your strategy don't work, we think you should operate like that, those people can become rock stars.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it could get to the point where AI will replace traders?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. I do think high frequency trading has made trading more difficult now than maybe 8 years ago. It has slowly happened. So I wouldn't count it out in like 10, 20 years. I do think there will be some traders that can still profit, right? But I think as high frequency trading gets more and more involved in the markets, identifying those opportunities in maybe 5, 10 years will get more difficult.
Do you use any AI with your current companies?
And, TradeZilla, we're building an AI feature for that. So we're building something with AI where, let's say you upload your data. The moment you upload your data, we will then give you feedback.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing right, what you're doing wrong. So it's like your own assistant in the market telling you and guiding you.
Mm-hmm. It sounds exciting.
Yeah,
man, I'm impressed you got your head switched on.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it's just like I said, it's just for me, playing the game is more fun than like the flex side of it.
Mm.
You know, I always say, and I look at social media for this, it's like, and I reminded myself that of this when I was like 20, 21, 22, is just keep in mind that a lot of people won't be around in 10 years. People don't play the 10-year game. People don't play the decade game. They play the month game or year game. So even now, you see crypto traders come in, go down. I know traders personally that were like hot shots in 2020, 2021.
Oh, yeah. They all went quiet after that.
I know some of them that are bankrupt. Like I know one trader, he hit me up and he made $4 or $5 million 1 year. And he hit me up the next year saying, hey, can I borrow $30,000? I need to pay for this.
Mm.
And I'm like, holy shit. You know, so it's like for me, it's just put your head down, keep building, keep playing the game and don't look at the scoreboard. You look at the scoreboard, it gets you comfortable, it gets you complacent, it messes with you. Just keep building and then look up every 10 years and you'll realize how much you accomplish in 10 years.
Awesome, man. Where can people find you on the socials?
My name is Omar Ashraf on all the socials, Instagram, Twitter, everything.
And if people want to check out the TradeZilla, TradeZilla.com?
Yeah, just TradeZilla.com.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Absolute pleasure. Appreciate it, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, man.